Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
This episode of Nature Now originally aired November 30th of 2021.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest today is Richard Tucker. Richard is the executive director of the Jefferson Land Trust. And I've got to say, I know Richard, and he is a man who truly loves his job, and he loves this community. So welcome, Richard.
Thank you, Nan. I really do appreciate being here.
And what we'll be talking about is a recent study that was completed by the Jefferson Land Trust in partnership with the North Olympic Land Trust. The North Olympic Land Trust primarily works in Clallam County. And the two organizations did a study to document the economic benefits of conserved and working lands on the North Olympic Peninsula. But before we go deep into that subject, just a few comments and our mystery sound. Of course, we all know winter is coming. I think maybe it's here. The signs are everywhere. Daylight savings times has ended. It's dark outside. The rains and winds have certainly settled in. We've been out of power any number of times. And we're seeing changes, of course, in the natural world. The colorful leaves of fall are fading, or actually mostly have been blown off their branches, except for the alders, you see. And things like the pigeon guillemots have lost their deep black plumage that has that really startling white wing patch. And they're now in their winter plumage. And I have to tell you, the first time I ever saw one in its winter plumage, I could not believe it was a pigeon guillemot. It's very unpretentious. And that's sort of a mottled gray and white. Also, start looking for the trumpeter swans. They have migrated back to our region. They've arrived in just the last couple of weeks. Look for them in local farm fields, especially. The ones that are retaining ponded waters are sites where you'll often see the trumpeter swan. And look along the farms along Center Road, because they're really reliable places to watch the swans now and throughout the wet winter. Well, this week's mystery sound is made by another bird species that has come south to our coasts from Western and Southern Alaska coastal regions. So I'm going to ask Nora Petrich, our sound editor, to play that sound. Well, and as usual, I'll identify the bird and we'll talk a bit about it at the end of today's show. So now let's focus back around to the economic benefits of conservation. I mean, economics are clearly not something we talk very much about on Nature Now. And I've got to admit, I don't think I've admitted this to Richard yet, I almost don't want to talk about economic benefits of conservation because, in my view of the world, the natural world is just endlessly interesting and intriguing and valuable in its own right. And conservation and stewardship, I mean, they're values that I would hope many of us just kind of deeply hold. But that said, we do live in a world of capital, consumerism, and monetary worth. So I have certainly learned over time, and I'm sure many listeners have, that when you try to understand certain public policy decisions and why they're decided in a particular way, the catchphrase, follow the money, is usually the one that will lead to a key in understanding. So with that, we are going to delve into economics and the economic benefits of conservation. Richard, tell us just a little bit about the study that was just completed by the Jefferson Land Trust and the North Olympic Land Trust. What really triggered it and why do you think it was important to do?
Thank you, Nan. The study was actually a three-party effort by Jefferson Land Trust, North Olympic Land Trust, and the Trust for Public Land. 6 years ago, Tom Sanford, the executive director of North Olympic Land Trust, and I met out at Jimmy Come Lately Creek, and we sat and said, do we need to find ways of working closer together as organizations? Because we share a landscape, the North Olympic Creek. And we know that the county boundaries make no sense, but the landscape is there. And we talked about different ways of conveying the value of not of our work, but also the value of these working landscapes. And so we brought in the Trust for Public Land, who has a history of doing these types of stuff, to be able to give us a different way of talking about conservation. For some people, just as you said, it's the value of conserving nature, and it's the fact that we have habitat trails, we have, you know, riparian areas protected, and that's valuable. That's has amazing value. But for some individuals and for some decisions, we needed to put it in a different way that related to the way they think, and that's economics. People ask me all the time, well, what does it do for the local economy, the work? And this actually shows that by protecting these areas, we're actually protecting our local economy and actually, in some cases, helping our local economy grow.
So how do you even go about framing the questions and the study area when you're trying to figure out the economic benefits of conservation? I mean, how do you even go about that?
Well, there are some metrics that, for example, are based upon what they call ecosystem services. You have certain wetlands and riparian areas protected. It has a benefit for water quality and water quantity. Or trees have a benefit for because it improves air quality.
You're saying is that has a monetary benefit. Because if nature wasn't doing it, human beings would have to figure out how to treat the water or shade the streams or invest in human efforts.
Exactly. Or in some cases, and especially in urban areas, if you don't have these services in place, there are health costs for local populations.
Right, right.
But the other way that you can look at it, and this is what we really wanted to focus on, as well as the ecosystem services, was the economic jobs and business impacts that conservation or working lands provide our community. A good example is the number of jobs and the benefits of our working farms on the peninsula. And they, you know, there's $9 million worth of farm products coming out of Jefferson County alone.
That's really tangible. You can count jobs and you can look at the value of products.
Exactly. Likewise with our working forest lands, there are a number of jobs that are supported by it. And there's $29 million of payroll coming into the local economy from those jobs that work in the working forest land segments of our local economy.
I mean, you had those monetary numbers. Do you have some numbers about the numbers of jobs, either in Jefferson County or the whole North Olympic Peninsula, that we can really attribute directly to the fact that we've got conserved lands and I should also say protected working lands, like some of the farms and forests? How big is that impact?
Well, for example, the number in Clallam County is 709 jobs are supported by working forest land. And when you look at our agricultural, as I mentioned, that we have several hundred jobs and it's $9.8 million in payroll. That's significant, especially for a county of our size of 30,000 people. So, and also there's $1.6 million of commercial fish landings in Jefferson.
Right. Yeah. And we all know that the fishing activity jobs are really important here in town, certainly. So in addition to those productive lands and being able to quantify that, what else do you look for?
Well, like you said, we can look at products. We can look at, if I'll pick the one area that the numbers are quite large, it's tourism. that are the place that we live, the place that we love. Just for example, and this is how specific we were able to get, for state parks in Jefferson County, the number of visitors and the money brought in by those state parks in Jefferson County is $29.8 million.
Wow.
That's huge. For when you look at the Olympic National Park, which is in Killala and Jefferson, $300 million annually that comes into the local economy.
Those are huge numbers.
They are, and they're real. And now we know that we saw some changes during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. But
what we're seeing is that tourism is bouncing back because people want to get out and they're coming back to the places they love. And that the, one of the places they love is the North Olympic Peninsula.
So do those numbers include, I think the economist phrase is direct and indirect. I mean, you have monies that go directly to jobs and the groceries that the people who have jobs are buying. But there are other sort of supporting the money is being moved around in the community. So that includes both of those, right?
Yes, it does. For example, when we have tourists come to go to the state park down at Dos Wallops, it's assumed that there's ancillary expenditures for food, for lodging, and for, you know, boat rentals, fishing tackle, whatever. And those are all included. And so you see that it doesn't just come from ticket for entrance to the parks, like the National, National Park, but it's also the fact that people spend money when they're traveling.
Yeah. And an economist, I think, would also say something like, those are really important dollars because they're not just being recirculated within our community. They're coming into the community from elsewhere.
That's correct. Absolutely.
So now I guess I'm trying to sort of get my brain around magnitudes. You've talked about hundreds of millions in tourism spending, and you've talked about, I think you said, forest economy somewhere around 17 or 18 million in wages and several more millions in farm and fisheries. If I try to think about the significance of that contribution, of that total contribution to our sort of total communities in the North Olympic Peninsula, and I guess you included parts of Kitsap County in this too.
We did.
Can you give me a sense of how big the sector is?
Well, let's take a look at Chimicum and the agricultural sector. We all know that Chimicum is one of the big agricultural centers on the peninsula. Chimicum, the Dungeness, and also we have a growing agricultural community down in Quilsing. Two businesses at the intersection in Chimicum prior to the pandemic employed over 100 people.
Yeah, that's an important thing to really kind of appreciate, take in and go, wow.
Mm-hmm. And then when you look at all the other farm workers and managers, we'll look at the Chimicum Farm Stand. They have not just hourly workers, but also managers. It's pretty significant. And when you, like I said, I go back to the fact that we're a county of 30,000 people. And so when you have two businesses connected to agriculture and the agricultural renaissance in Chimicum employing over 100 people, that's significant.
Yeah.
Likewise, when you add on the jobs for the food co-op and the farmers markets and all the other businesses that depend upon our local agricultural community, plus the value-added jobs, for example, Midori kimchi.
Mystery
Bay cheese. There's a whole list of businesses that are not just selling vegetables, but they're actually making other products out of it. And that includes cider and wine and all the other things. So it's that's why you're seeing a potential for these numbers to grow as some of these value-added products increase.
If you're just joining us, you are listening to Nature Now. Host Nan Evans is speaking with Richard Tucker, director of the Jefferson Land Trust, about the economic benefits of conservation. Now back to our show.
Yeah, let me ask you a little bit more about that, because the question certainly comes to my mind of, well, just how resilient are these economic benefits of working in conservation lands? Are they to such things as you mentioned the impact of the pandemic on tourism and how that's bouncing back? But if we think about things like the recent ongoing pandemic, and if we think about the impacts of climate change, how do you think about the resiliency or the sustainability of the economic benefits that this report documented?
We, North Olympic Land Trust and Jefferson Land Trust also did a study on climate resiliency for the region. And what we found is that many of these working landscapes are the most resilient. And by protecting them, we can actually allow them to evolve, because some landscapes are going to need to evolve. For example, working forests may actually have different species in them 100 years from now. But they're not going to be able to if they are not protected. Likewise, with agriculture, we may see some changing in agricultural practices. But there is always going to be a need for food and food security. And so by protecting these agricultural soils and keeping them in the hands of local farmers, we will be able to see maybe changing products coming out, changing agricultural products, but they'll still be able to produce food. And that's important to our local economy.
So that kind of leads me to ask another question. We think about how fortunate we are in the North Olympic Peninsula, because we have so much land that is either in conservation status or as our working natural lands. And I don't remember the numbers, but it's way up there. How do you answer the question of when is enough enough? When will we know whether we have conserved what we need to conserve? How do you answer that?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And we get that, I get that asked a lot. I mean, haven't you conserved enough? And my answer is no, because as long as there is prime agricultural soils that are subject to being divided and split and taken out of production, likewise with working forest lands, there's quite a bit of value coming out of working forest lands. For example, our working landscapes in these two counties absorb 1.2 billion cubic feet of water a year. That's important for water quality and water quantity.
Likewise, you get your mind around that.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And likewise, that for carbon sequestration, which we all know is a big issue regarding climate change and climate resiliency, our working landscapes store 4.23 billion.
B as in billion
of carbon every year. And I mean, they store that much in it for every year. If you divide it out, it's about $123 million a year.
Wow.
So there's value there. Now, when is enough enough? Well, there's plenty of land that is appropriate for development. What we're conserving is lands that matter to the community, whether it's agricultural farms, whether it's working forest land, we all need wood, whether it's habitat, meaning some of the, most of the areas that we're protecting, I would say the vast majority, is not appropriate for development because of either wetlands or riparian areas or steep slopes or critical habitat. But if you take those out of the equation, there's plenty of other land that could be developed sustainably. And that's really what we're talking about, is building a sustainable community. And that means conserving what needs to be conserved and allowing development to occur where it's appropriate, with appropriate densities and appropriate infrastructure. I think Jefferson County is trying to do that with bringing in sewer to some areas to allow for higher densities. But if you don't conserve, what you will have is sprawl. And that's a very wasteful use of land.
Mm-hmm. You know, we could talk about this for a really long time, but I think we have almost reached our time limit. And I think you've just summarized some really important points. Now, if someone wants to learn more and wants to actually look at the report and study it, is it available publicly?
It's available on our website, saveland.org.
Saveland.org. Okay, that's great for anybody who is interested in pursuing. And also, Richard, I'm thinking there are a lot of things to talk about, and talking about what you learned from the climate resilience study would be another really fascinating thing to spend some time on in a future program. So I hope we'll get a chance to do that. Now, let's see, we need to listen to that mystery sound again. Well, those were the calls of the black turnstone. The Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology describes them as being the color of wet rocks and surf spray. They really neatly match sort of Pacific Coast wintering habitat. You can see them on rocky coasts or amid piles of kelp at the high tide land. And they're usually working the rocks and the shells and the seaweed, turning them over, looking for flies and fish eggs or small shellfish. They are usually not noticed as easily when they're doing that. But if they're startled, they really just fly up as a big group, and they're really easy to spot at that point. And you hear that sort of stuttering, grating, rattling call. Well, that's our mystery sound for the day, and that's the end of this episode of Nature Now. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed our program, and we'll tune in again for future programs. Today's sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich, and Nature Now airs here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM, Wednesdays and Saturdays at 12:30. That's within the news hour. And most Thursdays, somewhere in the 5 p.m. hour. Of course, and I highly recommend it, going to the recent podcasts that are stored on the KPTZ website. Again, thanks for listening. In our ending music, Pink Floyd sings about the selfishness that money brings out in all of us. And for music buffs, listen carefully, because you'll hear 7-beat measures, more than the conventional 4-4, 2-4, or even 3-4 times. They're actually 7 beats. So here we go. Pink Floyd. Money, it's
certainly was in the right.